Okay, Mr. Chair, the webinar has been started and we are recording and broadcasting.
Very good. Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. This is a meeting on July 21st of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission Executive Committee. I am chair. My name is Charlie Casperi, representing Las Virgenes Municipal Water District. I would ask Caitlin to, I'll call the meeting to order. And I would ask Caitlin to go over the meeting procedures and following that to do a roll call.
Thank you, Martha. Mr. Chair.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, EJ. Hi, Erica. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Okay, welcome everyone. As authorized by Government Code Section 11.13.3, this meeting will occur solely via Zoom without an in-person meeting location. All members will be able to unmute themselves as needed, but we ask that microphones stay muted unless you're speaking. All public participants will be muted until it is your time to speak. Commission staff will invite you to unmute yourself. If you have questions, please use the virtual raise hand function that can be found at the bottom of the screen in the Zoom app. Or if you're joining over the phone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded, so we ask that you please speak clearly. And if there are issues or lags in the meeting broadcast, we may disable participant videos to preserve bandwidth. For technical support using the Zoom platform, please email it@agpvideo.com. That address can be found on today's meeting agenda. So that concludes the brief meeting logistics. So now I will move to member roll call and introductions. Okay, one moment, please, while I share my screen. I'll be calling members in order of last name, and feel free to state your affiliation. EJ Caldwell.
Present, West Basin Municipal Water District alternate.
Chair Casperi.
Charlie Casperi, representing Las Virgenes Municipal Water District.
Tessa Charnowski.
I am with Supervisor Sheila Kuehl's office. I am her alternate.
Welcome. Tom Ford.
Yes, good afternoon. Tom Ford, Director of the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program.
Maura Monaghan.
Hi, all. Alternate for Bruce Resnick for LA Waterkeeper.
Catherine Peace.
Hi, present, representing Heal the Bay.
Martha Tremblay.
Hi, Martha Tremblay, alternate for Robert Ferrante, Los Angeles County Sanitation District.
And Erica Yelensky.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. I'm the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program Coordinator with US EPA Region 9.
Hi there. So that should be all the members I see. So next would be, I recommend, Chair, that we move to item one, public comment.
Thank you, Caitlin. And again, thank you everyone for joining. Now is the time that members of the public may comment on items not on the agenda. Comments will generally be limited to a total of 4 minutes for all items on the agenda that people wish to speak on. Do we have any requests for public comment at this time, Caitlin?
Mr. Chair, we have no requests in advance, and I also don't see any members of the public joining the Zoom at this time.
Thank you very much. If anyone does join late and would like to make a general comment, I propose that I will allow that. Now we'll move on to agenda item 2A, order of the agenda. And I would note that staff proposes to move agenda item 3, member comments, before agenda item 2E, so that non-voting members do not have to wait until after the closed session to provide their comments. And unless there's an objection, I will I move that the agenda will proceed with that one change. No further changes. Anyone have an issue with that? No? Thank you. Item 2B, report from the Chief Administrative Director and the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program Director. Marissa, would you lead it off, please?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Well, hi, everyone, and thanks for being here today. This is going to be relatively brief because there's something I'd like to talk to you all about at the end regarding our hybrid versus remote meetings moving forward. So to start out with just an FYI, some of you may recall that staff brings the informational items list before the EC every few months for discussion. Input from the EC on the informational items list has been integral to ensuring priority informational items are scheduled for the governing board meetings. We will recommend items from that list for inclusion on the August and October governing board agendas, but those two agendas are both packed. So staff plans to bring the informational items list back to the EC at our next meeting in September to update priorities as we move into 2023. And a quick check-in on Prop 50 grant program progress. We have an approved grant agreement template now, and the recipients have all submitted most of their documents. So we hope agreement execution can begin in the next couple of months. And I'll just mention a couple more items of interest. On Monday and Tuesday of this week, there was a DDT research needs workshop hosted by California Sea Grant and USC Sea Grant. It included brief speaker updates on the state of the science and the latest developments regarding the various dump sites, but the bulk of the time was devoted to breakout rooms to gather stakeholder feedback on priority research needs. Their goal is to provide an investment framework for research. So I'll send out the workshop briefing document with our meeting follow-ups in case you're interested. Also, the chair noted this funding opportunity. NOAA received $2.96 billion in bipartisan infrastructure law funds to address the climate crisis and strengthen coastal resilience and infrastructure. So this money will obviously present various targeted funding opportunities over the next few years, but currently they have $65 million available for fish passage restoration grants with an application closing date of August the 15th. And also, kind of on the fun side for me at least, July 1st to 7th was National Beaches Week, and LA County Beaches and Harbors had a really inspiring Clean Beaches poster contest. Maybe some of you know about this. It's open to third through fifth graders from LA County, and it's called Can the Trash. Anyway, the winning posters are displayed on their website, and I took a look at these, and the perspective and the talent of these kids really struck me, so I suggest taking a minute of your time, if you can spare it, to view their artwork. I'll share that link as well. Okay, finally, as you all know, we're here together having a fully remote meeting today, and this is because the governor signed SB 189, which included allowance of virtual meetings under Bagley-Keene through July 1st, 2023. So during that time, any members attending remotely will not need to publicly notice their location. And this is welcome flexibility, but of course we want your input on remote versus hybrid meetings moving forward. So to be clear, we are authorized to have fully remote SMBRC meetings, all of them, but we do still have services available for hybrid meetings with in-person meeting location if that's preferred. We certainly don't have to decide everything today, but I'd really like to get your thoughts on remote versus hybrid and find out if anyone sees value in maintaining an in-person component for at least some governing board meetings. So I'd really welcome any comments or thoughts from the EC now. Tom.
Thanks, Marissa. So if I understand fully remote and I understand in person. Hybrid, however, is the bit of both. If we are in a hybrid situation, would folks on the governing board then have to make their remote meeting location known?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, that flexibility, okay. There's no more need to publicly notice your location. So even if we have a hybrid, it's going to be a lot easier for people to attend regardless of their circumstance. So really the only downside to hybrid that I've heard feedback on so far is that it can be somewhat limiting for the people who are not there in person. For the people in person, they have to drive, but their experience, they can hear, everything goes well. But the people listening online have said there have been some audio problems. We haven't gotten as much participation from people listening in for those reasons. So that's something to consider.
Any other thoughts?
Thanks, Charlie. Tessa?
Yes, Tessa.
Yeah, I mean, I would just recommend that we allow people to remain virtual to avoid polluting the planet. So I think that, you know, obviously in person is lovely, but for some of us, it's very far. If it's, at least for me personally, if it's at the Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, that's fine. If it's in El Segundo, I don't want to drive out there. I don't want to contribute to climate change and be stuck in traffic for 2 hours each way. So that would be my opinion.
Thank you. Erica.
No, thank you for bringing this up. So I personally, I think the all virtual from like hybrid is challenging because I have participated virtually during those meetings, but I'm glad that that option is there and I appreciate it being there going forward. My situation is different. I think I'm traveling. I have to hop on a plane and we have a limited travel budget. So I would like to attend some in-person meetings over the year, but I don't know that I can do it at the same frequency I was able to in the past. So I think keeping a mix and maybe I'm glad that maybe every EC meeting is all virtual and 4 governing board meetings are in person. I don't know if we need to have them all in person. And I'm throwing that out there because I also know it's got to be a lot of work for staff to coordinate the logistics of having the hybrid meeting. So I'm keeping that in mind too.
Thanks, Erica. EJ? Thanks.
Yes, the only thing I was going to add is that I think this provides a little bit of a safeguard as we're all moving back into the office a little bit more to a full-time or regular schedule. West Basin has a notification process when you, and I put this in quotes, you know, come in contact with somebody that's COVID positive. And what that means at West Basin is that you're at the building at the same time as somebody who subsequently finds out that they're COVID positive. So I received those notifications. Well, I know I've received about 8 of them in the last 3 weeks. And so I'm constantly wearing my mask, and even I attended the event earlier today at Las Virgenes, and it makes me feel very uncomfortable. And it would be easier, I think, in order to protect everybody and keep everybody safe, if there was the virtual option, at least for the time being.
Thank you. It looks like Catherine before Tom.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I echo and support everything that other folks have said. I think the flexibility is great, especially as we're navigating or continue to navigate COVID and surge in infections. So, but I do like the idea of some in-person meetings. So I think finding that balance would be great. And whether it is between the, I'm not sure if we're discussing just DC particularly right now, but between governing board and EC, you know, I think maybe having a few designated ones that we really encourage or try to get in person per year would be great. And then those could be ones that folks who are flying in or coming from farther could prioritize so that we get as many in person as possible. And maybe those are ones where it's kind of like bigger things in terms of looking at, you know, the year ahead or doing some planning things could be great.
Thank you. Tom.
And and Catherine basically covered everything I was going to submit. But I would think maybe one other thing I think is worth consideration is the executive committee being a smaller group, and I think works even more efficiently than that larger group in this remote type setting. And that for the governing board on those meetings where there is a lot of planning or decision-making, there's little replacement, I think, for being in person and being able to kind of see people's body language, and catch those subtleties in communication that often get lost over Zoom or other types of templates. So that said, I think I appreciate everybody's input.
I agree that Catherine and Tom really laid out a strong rationale for continuing EC meetings virtually. And I know that on the governing board meetings, we've got certainly when there is an election, it is important to do that in person. Caitlin did a great job managing the last one virtually, but it was a real exercise. So, and plus I just miss seeing you people in person. So let's, I think Marissa and Caitlin, you guys can kind of look at the workload for the balance of the year and maybe the first part of next year. It's July already, and pick out a couple of meetings where we would very much like to do an in-person, but have a virtual option to attend. And I know our production people are really good with sound, and a couple extra battery-powered microphones for the attendees makes all the difference in the world. So that's my thought.
Okay, other comments? I don't see anyone. So thank you, that was very clear. I think we'll take that and proceed with EC remotely, at least for the foreseeable future, and some governing board remote, but choose a couple with important items, and maybe we can even, the tour was wonderful. Maybe we could even have a field trip or something in conjunction with that. So we'll take that and run with it. Thank you all very much.
Okay, Tom, please lead off.
All right. Thank you, Charlie. Some updates about NEP programs and then updates on what we've been working on the ground over the past month or so. We have strong signals that we're going to have the guidance from the US EPA literally in the coming days. That will clear up what has been, fairly understood that we're looking at funding that is coming down to all the different NEP programs to help them advance their work on achieving goals of their CCMP. Once again, our strategic plan, and also taking a particular focus on climate resilience and making sure that the benefits of these investments manifest at least around 40% for underserved communities. That is consistent with the Justice 40 executive. I want to call it an executive order, but I could be wrong that it was some other type of edict from the executive branch, from the Biden administration. So with those things in hand, and not trying to jump forward in the agenda, I feel that the programs and projects that we've have in development, I think will fit in those in that space very well. And I'll be looking forward to sharing some of those with you later today. That's sort of the big news coming down the pipe there. As for what's happening on the ground from the Bay Foundation staff and our partners implementing progress towards this year's annual work plan, we certainly were not scuba diving this week with those big waves that were out there. So the dive team got a chance to catch up on paperwork and other things like that. Either out today or tomorrow to check on the success of our transplant of eelgrass from Catalina Island to three different locations within Santa Monica Bay. The purpose of that project was to see if those methods could be adapted to an open coastal environment. Although we call it a bay, Santa Monica Bay's got a very large mouth. It's not the most protective water body by any means from an energy standpoint. So this one-year survey following three that happened on a quarterly basis will start to give us a better idea of how successful or where it was successful or where not. And we're coupling that with some other environmental monitoring, looking at wave pressure data and temperature. Maybe in August at the governing board meeting, I'll have an update for you how that is moving forward. We continue to work with NOAA and National Marine Fisheries Service, as well as the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to advance abalone restoration and abalone recovery. A lot of these outplant efforts thus far are focused off of Palos Verdes, so that fits squarely in our study area. There's also tangential effort to this that's happening in Point Loma. And what I would submit is that we're getting better at our job. We can get it done faster. We're getting it done more smoothly. I think we'll start to see even some more marked success in the future as we increase the numbers and the number of sites of these snails that we're trying to outplant back to our rocky reef systems. We continued to work on kelp forest restoration off of Palos Verdes. 80% decline over the past 100 years, recognized for a number of stressors. And I think importantly, recognizing that our future still contains many of those same types of stressors and additional challenges in light of climate change. So we're encouraged that we're still making progress off of White Point. Palos Verdes is a tremendous, interesting history of that location. And then very close, as close as we've ever worked, to Angel's Gate, which is the northernmost exit from the LA Long Beach Port Complex, and that is at Point Furman. So those efforts continue, and we've seen some really nice results this year on Point Furman from some of the progress of the last several months. As for our community engagement program, and kudos to a lot of other folks in the state for really starting to get after sources of marine debris, and in this source reduction of the number of plastics that are available or will be available in the state of California. There's no shortage of numbers of ways to try to get after this. And we were pleased to help support an effort that's being led by the National Park Service to encourage people to go out into the national parks and document plastics, other litter and debris that they may find so that they can get a better handle on that. And I think build some awareness for not just the sort of aesthetic detraction of the presence of that material, but also starting to get at some of the values for how much is out there. Pleased to say that we're going to continue to work with our environmental charter school program in Hawthorne, Inglewood, and Glendale. I'm sorry, not Glendale. What's wrong? I slipped a gear. That happens when you turn 53. It'll come to me. We're rebuilding some of the infrastructure on those campuses and specifically waiting for the fall in this case to start rebuilding the infrastructure on the high school campus because the high school students and their faculty really think that they should be in on the ground level of planning those out and building the various elements of how they'll work, where they'll work, and accordingly some of the curriculum surrounding that. So happy to see that moving forward. In the summer, we do spend a great deal of time working with the boating community. There are more folks down at the docks at their boats in the summer, enjoying the relatively calm seas and the warm weather. So it's prime time for us to get out there, make contact with those boaters, remind them of the resources that are available to them to reduce pollutants from their boating practices, including septic and bilge pump outs, but also collecting potentially spilt gasoline or diesel when they're fueling, using proper chemicals. We even have information now for vessels to use composting toilets on board their boats, which then don't even require having to then go and take this stuff to a pump out and to deal with. I've not used one yet, but apparently they're great. All right. Getting close to the end here, folks. At this point of the year, we're done doing a lot of planting and seeding with our projects along the beaches and many of either in the wetlands or in the coastal dunes at the LAX dune complex, because it's just the wrong time of year for plants to get in the ground here. It's dry, it's hot. So this is the time of year that we focus on a lot of monitoring. So our team is very busy across any number of those sites collecting data to help us understand and assess the condition of those projects, as well as inform adaptive management moving forward. That said, we still have community events heading out to the LAX dunes to continue to weed that area so that we can start to clear the space that we would then start to seed and or plant container stock into once we get closer to the wet season. Hopefully a wet season this year. I think you're all with me on that come October, early November. And we've got we've got a few reports that'll be coming out as a result of those efforts in the coming months. And then lastly, we are through almost the final stages of securing the funding for an additional dune restoration project on Santa Monica Beach, just south of the first of those efforts that we've been involved with here in Los Angeles County. So this would get close to a 5-acre footprint, help encompass and support a site that has frequently supported us Western snowy plovers over the past few years. They have very specific site fidelity for reasons that I don't think we've actually got a great handle on as scientists, because some of these sites just don't really add up. But nonetheless, the plovers are back there year after year. So there's something there. We're just going to try to help those organisms in this area, as well as start to create more of that resilience and verticality in the beach. So that's what we've been working on. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to try to address them.
Mr. Chair, I do see we have one member of the public who joined, and I know you offered that if we had members of the public join that they could comment under general comment. So I just wanted to extend an invitation to our public participant to comment under, to provide general public comment, or you may comment under the item we're currently on, item 2B, reports from the Chief Administrative Director and Santa Monica Bay NEP Director. So I'll just pause for a quick moment before we move to member comments. And you can use the virtual hand function if you'd like to comment at this time. Okay, I think we can proceed.
So Charlie, I don't know if you'd like, but I did see Erica's hand up and then Martha's. So if those are questions directed at me or some additional comments. Yes,
Martha, please go ahead. Thank you, Tom.
Hi, thank you, Tom, for the report. Hey, so I was wondering, and maybe I know I missed the last executive committee meeting, but I think it was for the governing board that you were going to do a presentation on the eelgrass work, you know, some of the success that you've seen, but then we ran out of time. And then I don't know if you did that presentation, I just missed it, or is that something maybe when there's a little bit of time at the governing board meeting or the next EC, I would be interested in seeing, you know, I think you were going to show us pictures or something, right? So did I miss that presentation, or, and I apologize if I did, but if you haven't, maybe you can do it someday.
No, thank you, Martha. And it wasn't the eelgrass in this case, it was the kelp forest restoration work. And we've got a bunch of materials because that project's now been in operation for almost 10 years. So in advance of that meeting, I think we'll share a number of links. You can check out some of the short documentaries as other and other media that have come along. And then, yes, I'd be more than happy to share images and statistics, summaries.
So yes, I apologize. I got confused. Yeah, I thought it was the kelp, but I wasn't sure. And I'm like, well, he's talking about eelgrass now, so maybe it was eelgrass. But yeah, it's always good to see pictures. I mean, I'm not familiar with many marine life, so it's always nice to see things, especially when you guys are seeing good outcomes. All right, thanks.
Yeah, no, happy to share this. Thank you, Martha. And yeah, appreciate it.
Erica.
Yeah, I second that. And no, thanks for your report, Tom. I missed part of, you had mentioned something with the National Park Service and identifying trash on parklands. Can you just, is there more that you could share about that and how, like what the Bay Foundation's role is? And
what I can share with our role is we're just trying to help promote outreach for that effort. We're not directly involved. Okay. If anything, I thought there was an opportunity, respective of our geography, to bring some attention to, you know, the national park lands that are right here in the Santa Monica Mountains that, you know, aren't the big ones that I think people, you know, oh, National Park, Yosemite, Yellowstone. Hey, we've got it right here, people. And so I think that was something we were trying to help call some attention to. But I can share a website link either with Marissa so she can send that around to everybody if that's the preferred path in this setting so that folks can take a look at it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I was just curious if they were using, if the Park Service was using a tool like Literati or something like that to help people identify. But yeah, yes. If you find a link.
I think it is very similar to one of those types of tools.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure.
Any other questions?
Charlie, I think that's back to you, sir.
Very good. I have a question for Tom and Marissa both. I saw I think it was Brown and Caldwell, their water newsletter, about the NOAA having $10 billion in grant money for beach stabilization and some other and sustainability type efforts. And I wonder if there's anything there that might be valuable for our governing board members to know about or for the governing board to investigate.
Tom, you want this? Charlie, I saw an email from you and I mentioned some of NOAA's large amount of funding and what's available now in my report, but I know Tom has been interacting with this lately, so I'll let him.
Yeah, and my apologies, I don't think I've got too much more to add to this, Charlie, other than I think they may have received something around that figure. I've seen so many lately, it's hard for me to keep an accurate catalog in my head. But I also don't expect all those monies to be hitting an availability this year. And there's a number of ways that has sort of fragmented off in various offers. I'm happy to take it on the side with Marissa and figure out how we might best share some of this information with everybody. Because it seems like it's every other day that three other new opportunities, oftentimes with some very specific targets, are coming online for opportunity. But I certainly would not want anybody within the National Estuary Program here to not be aware of those opportunities and miss something that could help them move their work forward.
Really appreciate that, Tom and Marissa. And again, I'm as confused by a lot of this stuff as you are. It's overload and it's difficult to tell when you just pick up a piece of something. Was it already something that was reported or is this something new? And the government's got lots of money to push out the door now. So I don't know not likely to remain the case, but thanks for investigating that and look forward to hearing any good news you might turn out.
Happily.
Any other questions for Tom or Marissa on this agenda item? Seeing none, then we will move on to consideration of approval of the May 19th, 2022 Executive Committee meeting minutes. Anyone have any changes proposed? Seeing none, I would like a motion to approve, a motion and a second to approve the minutes as published.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Thank you very much. Caitlin, would you call a roll vote on this, please?
Of course. Let me just adjust my screen here. Okay, EJ Coldwell.
Yes.
Thank you. Chair Caspary?
Yes.
Thank you. Tessa Charnowski?
Yes.
Thank you. Maura Monaghan?
Yes.
Thank you. Catherine Peace?
Yes.
Thank you. And Martha Tremblay?
I'm going to abstain because I wasn't present last time.
Thanks. Thank you. The motion passes and the minutes are approved.
Thank you, Caitlin. We'll move on to item 2D, and that is discussion of items to establish the August 18th Governing Board meeting agenda. And we have a number of agenda items to consider. And I would call on Caitlin to introduce the first item and numbered 2DI.
Thank you, Chair and Executive Committee members. So I'm going to be summarizing just some of the information in the staff report that we distributed on July 8th. So for the August Governing Board meeting, we recommend to schedule this item, the consideration of adoption of a resolution regarding recommendations for the Safe Clean Water Program fiscal year 22-23 Stormwater Investment Plans, or SIPs, within the Santa Monica Bay watershed. As a reminder, there's three of the Safe Clean Water Program watershed areas in our NEP boundary. So that would be the North, Central, and South Santa Monica Bay watershed areas. In April, those steering committees for those areas completed development of the fiscal year 22-23 SIPs. These SIPs include funding for new projects and for multi-year projects approved from previous fiscal years. On July 16th, which was the same day as the last governing board meeting, the Safe Clean Water Program's Regional Oversight Committee advanced the SIPs to the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors are anticipated to consider approval of those SIPs in October this year. And for the last governing board meeting, commission staff distributed a staff report summarizing projects in those SIPs, and county public works staff presented an overview of the North, Central, and South Santa Monica Bay SIPs. Member comments at the meeting focused on the broader Safe Clean Water Program, such as the amount of revenue generated, public participation, and updates on the education program. Commission staff recommended for the governing board members to review the summaries of the 10 projects included in that staff report in preparation for consideration of a resolution at the next governing board meeting. So now staff is preparing a draft resolution to distribute in advance of the August governing board meeting. We noted that two of those 10 projects, the regional pathogen reduction study and the community garden stormwater capture investigation scientific study, applied for funding to more than one of the Santa Monica Bay watershed areas, but they were only selected by one of those watershed area steering committees in their SIPs. So commission staff recommend that the governing board not take a position on those two projects due to the lack of consensus between the steering committees and our watershed. And that's consistent with how we've approached Safe Clean Water Program projects for the past two rounds of funding. So moving forward, staff will consider recommendation on the eight projects that are included in attachment two of the Executive Committee staff report. And our initial approach, which is also similar to what we've done for the past two resolutions that the Governing Board approved for the Safe Clean Water Program, is to base our support on whether the projects will further the implementation of the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan Action Plan. So the Executive Committee members' recommendations on preferred content of that resolution are definitely welcome during member comments. And if there's no public comment on this item, I think I'll just pause for a moment to see if there's any public comments. I don't see any hands raised, so Chair, I recommend we move to member comments on this item. Oh, you're muted, Chair.
Very good. Anyone have comments on item 2DI? The recommendations and for the Safe Clean Water Program fiscal year grants. Any questions?
Erica?
Erica?
Thank you. So this is more not about the approval, the board, the governing board's approval, but could you speak to the scores? Is there a kind of a threshold for the number of points that projects need to have to make it onto this list? And are the scores, do you know, is it an average of all the watershed subcommittees that the project has come through? And if that is a very, if that involves a long answer, I will take it offline another time. It's just my unfamiliarity with that process.
Sure. Thanks. And I know a lot of Marissa included an executive committee members here are very involved in the Safe Clean Water Program, so they might have more information on that. But I just wanted to clarify, when you say the list of projects, do you mean the list of projects that we included in our staff report, or those that the projects that are included, how they get into a SIP, a stormwater investment plan to be considered?
I was focused on the eight projects within, or the projects in the staff report.
Sure. So we selected those projects in a very simple way. We basically looked at the stormwater investment plans from the North, Central, and South Santa Monica Bay watershed areas. And for those steering committees, they have a process for technical review and scoring. And there is a threshold, you know, it's a separate process from what we do here with the commission staff do, but they have like a scoring committee that reviews water quality, water supply, community investment, and other benefits, and will score. And there's definitely a threshold that projects have to meet to be considered for on whether they would even be included in a SIP for a watershed area, if that makes sense. And if I'm misspeaking, Marissa, I invite you to correct me. So we looked at just those projects that met that threshold that were considered by the steering committees, and they chose those as like, yes, these are the projects that we want to prioritize for funds for the next fiscal year. We mapped those onto our NEP boundary and which ones were actually included within our watershed. And so that's how we came up with the 10 projects that we shared with the governing board at the last meeting. And then, as I explained, the reason why we have eight projects is because two of the scientific studies, there wasn't consensus amongst the three steering committees as to whether or not they wanted to prioritize those. So we suggest to not take a position on that. So I hope that answered your question. And Marissa, if you have anything to add. Okay.
Thank you.
And I would just like to clarify, Caitlin, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Board of Supervisors can award grants to those two programs, because we don't take a position on them, doesn't mean they can't receive funding. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Catherine.
Thanks. I was just thinking about whether the governing board has ever submitted comments or weighed in on this kind of at the step before, so when they're at the WASCs, and if that might be something that we should consider, partly just because at this point the projects, I mean, it's not a complete foregone conclusion, but they're fairly set in stone is my understanding. And I'm just thinking about, you know, if there are projects that we're missing that maybe our support would help get across the, you know, potentially change the outcome, that there just might be more opportunity or more impact of weighing in at the WASC level. Because I know, you know, obviously they can't, that when the SIPs go forward, there are certain projects that don't get approved by the WASC. And I know just from Heal the Bay's involvement in some of the WASCs as watershed coordinators, that there's some projects where there's quite a bit of community support, for instance, that then don't get approved. And not to say that, like, you know, we would support all those or the executive, the governing board would, but just thinking about whether there might be an opportunity to weigh in there. I know that'd probably be a bit more work because there's more projects and have to dive into them a little bit more, but just wanted to kind of put that into people's brains about something to think about.
Thank you, Catherine.
And I just want to, based on what Catherine said, actually the district brought that up when we were preparing for their presentation that they gave, that general presentation on the Safe Clean Water Program at the last meeting. And they said, hey, have you considered providing comments during the process as other groups do, as compared to this system of a supporting resolution later on down the line. And we said we would consider that. And with you saying that too, I think maybe we should, staff can bring this up earlier in the year to the EC and see if that's something we can do. Obviously with such a large governing board, coming to a consensus could be difficult, but it is definitely something to consider. Doing, I think. So I think we can bring that back to you at the appropriate time earlier in the year next year. See what you all think.
Yes, Martha.
So I guess I have a question for Marissa. You sit in some of these committees, right? How many committees do you sit in?
I'm only on the South Bay.
Just this, okay, so just one. Okay.
But there's other members of the governing board who are on all three, and some people on this call who are on some. So yes, we did actually vote on these projects for our area. And everything that's on this list has already been approved by WASCs. So these are approved SIPs, yeah.
Okay, so then when you're in this committee, right, you as the representative, right, you see the whole, you know, whatever's introduced, or I mean, I know the process, there's like the different committees, right? But you have an opportunity to see some of these projects early on. And if you think they are helpful to help further our mission, you provide input, right, as these meetings are happening, right?
Yeah, we do. We get presentations on all the projects and have a chance to evaluate them and become familiar prior to making a decision. And we get to make comments when decision time comes. So, yes.
Okay, so when you see something, you're able, if it's something that you think it's important for us, you're able to provide some input, right? And you have a vote in this.
Yes, and I am only on the South, although I would like to be on all of them since it's all our service area.
Yes.
It depends on if positions open up, but yes, Martha, to all of that.
Okay. So yeah, no, that's helpful. And then I guess you're right. Some of us, I don't sit on these committees, but we do have a participant. The sanitation does have in several, but yeah, I guess if you think there's things, projects that might be important that, you know, maybe providing updates during the meetings, you know, before the formal process would be helpful, because then we can kind of see there are like multi-benefits. Because sometimes when you sit, like, we are the sanitation district representative, so we're sitting there as a sanitation district representative, right? Versus if we get to see how it also ties in to other benefits, you know, I mean, and this is where, yeah, you being part of that can kind of help inform us of things. And then maybe there could be some advocacy kind of that way, right?
Okay, yeah, I'll try that. And I'll probably come to the EC first before we go to the governing board. And I know Kuhn is on all of the committees and he's our representative from Public Works. And, but as you said, he's reporting from a Public Works perspective. So we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for those questions. Yes, Erica.
Just thank you. So one more, Catherine, this is something that you brought up. So there were projects that maybe were supported by the community, but were not included in the SIPs. Do the SIPs or the watershed coordinators work with those projects typically to help get them ready? Have you, I mean, I know that the Safe Clean Water program is still relatively new, but have you, is that opportunity available? I'm just curious what you're all hearing and seeing. Thank you.
I can respond to that if that's okay, at least partially, and others weigh in too. Yes, I think so. I think the watershed coordinators definitely are active in trying to work with projects that don't get funding. So both through identification of other funding, or if maybe they need to go through the technical kind of process before getting to the infrastructure. And I mean, I think also some of it is just really weighing the funding that's available. So, you know, having to make those decisions. And so some of it just might come down to timing too.
Thanks. That's helpful to know that people aren't really left in the dust, that if there is some support to help move things, if it seems viable.
And Erica, actually, at our next EC meeting in September, we will be recommending for the October Governing Board meeting agenda a brief presentation from the Safe Clean Water Program watershed coordinators who have a specific role, and it would be all three, North, South, and Central, coming. So you could ask them questions and maybe there's an opportunity for coordination there. So
any other questions? I think this is good information that how our approval or lack thereof might affect a project. I'm pleased to hear that the watershed coordinators are working with all applicants that are proposing projects to make sure that they provide a submittal that has a good chance of success. And I would expect that if a project that is not recommended for inclusion in our resolution chooses to make a presentation or an appeal to the governing board next month, that's certainly an opportunity for them to do that. I would just ask staff to be prepared to explain why a particular project may not have made the cut in your estimation this time, any specifics associated with that. Any questions on that? Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next item for consideration, and that is to DII, consideration of the National Estuary Work Plan for the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law funding. Marissa, would you introduce this, please?
Yes, I will. Thanks, Chair. Okay, so today's staff is proposing, and we recommend, that the EC consider scheduling approval of the SMB NEP work plan for bipartisan infrastructure law funds, aka Bill, for the August 18th governing board meeting. We prepared a brief staff report to cover just the basics of this item. Over the past few months and today, you've heard from the NEP director about the expected bill funding. This funding allocates $132 million to the US EPA to distribute among the 28 national estuary programs for projects to implement the CCMPs. For SMB NEP, the tentative funding amount is $909,800 annually over 5 years. US EPA has not released final bill funding guidance, so many details are pending. However, we do know that the bill funding will include a focus on advancing equity and on climate resilience, and that the funds will be tracked separately from the annual NEP grant, although the application process is similar. So the commission staff is collaborating with the Bay Foundation staff to develop a draft bill work plan. We selected projects for the work plan based on ability to further implementation of the CCMP action plan, alignment with bill funding priorities to address equity and climate resilience, and opportunities to advance the priorities identified by governing board members and stakeholders, including the public, during our SMB NEP fiscal year 23 work plan development process that we recently completed. And finally, on readiness of the projects to proceed. The staff report today includes a list of 8 proposed projects and the CCMP action numbers they support. This is attachment 1 in the staff report. The projects are tentatively expected to exhaust the 5 years of bill funding, and commission staff would distribute a staff report along with the draft bill work plan for consideration of approval at the August governing board meeting. Of course, we welcome questions and feedback from the EC today first, but I'd like to turn it over to Tom now to provide just a brief sketch of the proposed projects, if you don't mind, Tom.
I don't mind at all, Marissa. Thank you. I think that was a wonderful intro as to why these 8 projects are in consideration. So I'll try to move through them quickly. If there's questions on individual ones as I go in order, I'm happy to try to address those at the time or do so at the tail end. Fortunately, and we can thank Martha, everybody's going to hopefully learn a lot more about the PV kelp restoration project in the near future. Very pleased to say that it is one of the largest and most successful of its kind in the world. And the science that is being generated by this project is helping inform coastal management in a number of temperate coasts around the world. And we've contributed to some of those types of reports. And there's been a few scientific publications that support the value of that work. In short, we're getting close to finishing off the restoration of these natural reefs and trying to convert them back to functioning kelp forest, which have higher levels of production, draw down more CO2. Paper that is to be published in the coming months based upon research on PV shows that we actually can attenuate, slow the advective movement of water through these kelp forests, which then causes sediment to drop out, water quality benefits. And notably, especially with the funding that was first directed towards this program, was to help benefit public health by giving folks fishing opportunities on rocky reef systems that didn't carry the same types of potential burdens as fishes off of soft bottom habitats. So we are indirectly supporting subsistence fishing and hopefully giving folks more opportunity to catch fish that are from the data suggests that they are healthier choices for themselves and their families. So at this point, much of this focus would be focused on White Point, Palos Verdes, and Point Furman, which are sort of the last two remaining large urchin barrens on the peninsula. Moving on from there, and I spoke about some of the recent efforts of our abalone restoration work. This is a diverse group of partners trying to help manage abalone restoration and recovery. Recovery in this case applies specifically to a function associated with endangered species management, trying to prevent the white abalone from going extinct. The white abalone's range is actually quite small. It encompasses the Southern California Bight, extending from roughly Point Conception down into Northern Baja. And we work with federal, state biologists from Washington State, Oregon, California, and specific interests in Mexico as well to help move these efforts forward. And Palos Verdes, with the benefit of having kelp forest restoration, which is the habitat for abalone, proves out to be a really nice place to start loading these abalone in. And fingers crossed, if we're successful, and it's probably going to happen in some on a decadal scale, we might get enough abalone back out there to once again be able to open up that fishery and have what was a long-standing cultural tradition for people to go down to the rocks, harvest some abalone, and bring them home, which hasn't been an option in Southern California since just before my arrival in this state in the late 90s. The next project on the list, number three, is the Adamson House Living Shoreline Project. You've heard from me maybe too much about sand dunes and their benefits in creating coastal resilience, but it's certainly not the only tool, and we certainly need more tools in order to try to effectively deal with sea level rise, coastal flooding, coastal erosion. And this project relies on cobble berms, or what are called cobble dynamic revetments. So cobbles are usually, you know, those river stones that we think of that are about this size class. They are a natural component of many beaches. We certainly have seen a shunting of this type of material moving into our near shore environments in the bay due to urbanization, channelization of our waterways, debris retention dams, or dams that were created in order to capture water. So that material isn't making it down to our shore. What cobbles do on a beach that is different than sand is they tumble with the wave energy, but they aren't transported as far as the sand, just based on their size and their mass. Also, when the water rushes up onto one of these cobble berms, it sinks down in between those very large voids between those cobbles compared to the voids between the sand grains, drops that energy out of the water and returns that water back to the ocean without such strong erosional forcing. So it can really be a very nice addition to coastal resilience. We don't have a project like this happening in the LA region. State Parks is the lead on this effort in this case to really deal with some very imminent issues with the Adamson House property. We have the exposure of midden deposits from the Chumash village of Umaliwu that are starting to end up in the coastal zone. And by that, I mean in the wave wash. So a great opportunity for us to make an investment here to advance that science and protect those coastal resources. Number four reads Santa Monica Breakwater Intertidal Preserve. So the Santa Monica Breakwater was originally proposed in 1931. The city floated a bond for $690,000 for the construction of that break wall. They were originally going to pour concrete. The form broke, and they were like, oh gosh, we're stuck. So then the Army Corps of Engineers became involved and said, no, pile up rocks from the quarry in Catalina. And the original construction of that breakwater was completed in end of July 1934. It was intended to be an economic driver to help offset losses associated with the Great Depression. Since that time, a number of storms, a number of cataclysmic events, the breakwater really doesn't function as much as a breakwater as it used to. It's not tall enough anymore to intercept some of the higher wave energy coming into the environment. And it is no, in many cases, it's not emergent from the water any longer. So that is an interesting opportunity for this project, is to increase protection for the Santa Monica Pier, which we know is a venue that receives tens of millions of visitors every year from a diversity of communities around Los Angeles and literally the world. And it helps us also get at another one of our very driving concerns from our climate change vulnerability assessment, which is focused on rocky intertidal habitats. So rocky intertidal habitats, tide pools, and similar features are our most stressed, most threatened habitat with climate change. In this case, we have an opportunity to enhance or establish functioning intertidal habitat in conjunction with providing increased protection from sea level rise and storm events impacting Santa Monica, the Santa Monica Pier. So an exciting project, and again, another one that really moves the needle forward from an engineering standpoint and a suitability standpoint that could be applied to other artificial structures and natural rocky intertidal environments, which will arguably require these types of things in the future. I could say a little bit more, but I'll leave that one at that for now. As for number five, Venice Marina Del Rey Four Dune Beach Restoration Project. Similar to many of the projects that you've heard me describe in the past years here, going out with community members, staff, again, a long list of partners to try to create sand dunes that will naturally give us some verticality and push back against ocean waters and coastal erosion. One of the most vulnerable sections of our coastline, based upon modeling for sea level rise, is Venice Beach. And when I say Marina Del Rey, I mean both sides of the Marina Del Rey channel. So Marina Del Rey Peninsula and Playa Del Rey Beach. So there's a lot of opportunity there. There's a great deal of width of those beaches, and there are a least turn least turn protection area along the beach and in the peninsula area that could also benefit from this work. We might be able to benefit those birds with some additional roosting opportunity. That is another target that we'd like to take a look at as a potential project. Number six, Beach Management Certification Program. This is an effort that's long been led by one of our TAC members, Karen Martin, with an understanding that the vehicle traffic practices for grooming beaches can have a lot of negative effects, especially if they're done in sensitive areas. And there's no formal mechanism right now for that training to be passed around amongst agencies in Southern California and specifically in LA County to make sure that folks that are operating vehicles out there or conducting other types of beach maintenance activities would benefit from understanding more about the landscape that they're working on. So this would be a chance for us essentially to bring all those best practices together, put them into a web type portal, and encourage, if not, you know, really get some oomph behind the merits for agencies and the folks working on those beaches to have this certification, this training, keep that up to date, keep that contemporary for them so that we can have best practices across all of our beaches, regardless of their state. All right. Number seven, the Black Surfers Collective, diversity in the lineup. And that is their slogan, if not their mission. We've long worked with these folks at the Bay Foundation. They do a very beautiful job trying to knock down some of the cultural barriers that exist amongst communities of people in Los Angeles. Their recognition of their presence on the beach is not the same. It is not culturally uniform. That beach really belongs to all of us, and that beach activity, surfing, beach culture may not be as inclusive depending upon your demographic in Los Angeles. These folks have done a terrific job developing programs that knock down those walls and also have support often disadvantaged community members making it out to the beach, actively bringing them out to the beach in a program that requires that they sometimes, a lot of kids have to take swim lessons so they can learn how to swim, so that they can show up to the beach and they can spend a part of their summer out there in a camp-like setting, receiving surf instruction, learning about the ocean, and learning about cultural traditions that they may not be aware of, to help really start to make what I get the physical access point argument of this, but there's this knocking down this acceptance that we need to go there. And when it comes to climate change, We expect inland heating to really accelerate ahead of the heating that we'll see along the coast. There's going to be a need for more access, more relief, and I think that this helps bring awareness to this issue and will help help really actually take individuals and get them out there and have that personal experience. And number eight is a coastal access and beach visitor user data study. And although this is number eight, maybe it could be number one, because I think a lot of the benefits to supporting disadvantaged communities with this work along our coast are difficult to tease out of some of the tools that we have available to us from the federal or the state level. It's not to take anything away from them. It's just that they weren't, I think, designed to look at this. If I look at the beach in the South Bay, its status from a community standpoint is based upon the property values and the properties behind it and who lives there and their income. Doesn't account for the folks that come and visit those places. And we don't have those data on those individuals, where they're going on our beaches, what assets along our coast they're utilizing. And as a result, we may be ignoring places that we should really be prioritizing for our work in order to make sure that we're delivering these benefits to disadvantaged communities. So this would be one of the first things we'd love to get off the ground as part of this BIL package, is being able to utilize cell phone data to understand where folks are going along this coast, how long they're staying there, and then follow that up with surveys to understand why people are using these assets. Am I going to that beach because it's my favorite beach and I love it? Or am I going to that beach because it's the one I can get to and the parking's cheap? Or is there, what are the various elements of this story? It's been done successfully with the Narragansett Bay National Estuary Program. It really illustrated to them and drove a lot of their investments over the past couple of years. I see this as a great opportunity for us as well. And with those data and that understanding, I think a number of these other projects may better be able to quantitatively support disadvantaged communities. Action number 28 in our plan. We're certainly looking at, you know, supporting PMPs and public access, which is number 25 in our action plan. Number six restoring healthy beaches, and we're recovering abalone for ecological as well as cultural reasons, and restoring kelp, because as I say, if you have the California coast without kelp, it is like the Amazon without trees. Things just start to fall apart. So that's my rough and quick breakdown for all of you. I hope I didn't put you to sleep. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to try to address them.
Yes, Tessa.
Yeah, question of access reminds me of the various beach buses that exist. I know that Supervisor Kuehl, the third district, has a beach bus that goes from Woodland Hills, hottest part of the city, you know, to Santa Monica through Topanga Canyon. It's fairly well utilized, but the hours are limited, the stops are limited. If we're finding, and it just doesn't go very far. So it just seems like if we're sort of studying, I love the idea of seeing where do people go, you know, what resources are they tapping? Where are they coming from? And thinking about, as I mentioned before, I highlighted polluting the planet. We want, you know, getting people into public transit to go to the beaches. Her buses are like decked out. They're like, they have a mural on them. They're fun, making it really cool and easy. And it's a dollar. It costs a dollar.
Wow.
Each way. Yeah. So something like that, keeping in mind that access can be a really, you know, simple thing. And the more we learn about where people are coming from, why they're not, if they can't afford to pay for parking, could they take a beach bus? But a beach bus would have to go all the way to El Monte or something, you know. Just adding in the idea of they have the transit to trails, transit to beach.
Yes, Tessa, I think that that's exactly a potential output of understanding I think we're going to get the things that we know, and then we're going to have the things that we don't learn about. And again, I think that, you know, why aren't folks from this community or this area making it to these coastal assets? What are those barriers? And as much as we may find information in this study that tells us what some of that is, I think there's going to be a lot of those questions that remain unanswered. And these types of assets and developing that type of transport and making folks aware of that, I think might be something that we could really help inform with this work. And then if we do repeat the study over the course of time, maybe we do it every 3 years over the course of these coming 5 or 6 years, I know it doesn't quite fit, but something along those lines, we might be even be able to look at the efficacy of some of those outreach efforts and some of those things changing how people are accessing the coast. And it may be worth sharing that, you know, COVID really shook things up because the beaches were closed and the parking lots were closed, but there were still places you could park along PCH and make it down to the coast. And a lot of folks made it to those areas, probably hadn't made it to those areas in the past. Can't say that with any certainty, but what we did see was an uptick in visitorship to places, and that's not where the lifeguard assets are. And then the number of ambulances at the LA County fire stations wasn't commensurate for dealing with that number of people. Sanitation's not keeping up with some of these access points that are now more broadly accessed, for lack of a better term. So there's a lot for us, I think, to inform, and a lot of infrastructure to try to help put in place to benefit everybody. Thanks for that, Tessa. Martha, I see your hand up.
Yes, thank you. So thank you for the information on the project. So I was wondering, I didn't see any estimated cost or is, so I like it. And are they ranked in order of preference? And I guess at this point, we just want to be prepared in terms of something comes our way. We have ideas in terms of the work that we would want to do. And then from there, depending on the money, we would kind of spread it out. Is that the idea?
Yeah. So I know oftentimes, like when we put out a call for, you know, proposals, and we've got a tranche of $10 million, and then we end up with, you know, $80 million worth of potential projects to do. So I wouldn't say that everything on this list at a very full scale fits within that $4.5 million, but I think that that's really what I should be trying to get us towards for August, so that everybody can see quite clearly how close we're going to get on all this with extant resources. Making up a very giant wish list for you folks to approve for us to then go after, I'm not sure that that actually meets the need of trying to get these funds encumbered and doing the work. But what Charlie was talking about earlier, I think is also very much there. There's a lot of money available for this work, more so than there's been in my career. So if we're smart, we're going to be able to get these projects started. And we should have the opportunity to go find and access other funds to enhance the work that we're talking about here. And some of the early results of this work coming out in the next couple of years would still allow us to capture a lot of these other potential investments. So, Martha, no ranking. When I sent this list over to Caitlin, I know I put it like an alphabetical order because I didn't know what else to do. But I think that that's something that we're expecting the governing board to help deduce and say, you know, we really like this one, or we love them all, or, you know, I'm not so sure about that one. I mean, I think that's some of what we're trying to figure out.
Okay, so then for the governing board meeting, you'll send a little bit more information so that we're prepared to give you input.
Yes, Martha. And again, just to reflect back, like, still don't have the guidance on exactly how these monies are supposed to go out the door. So I didn't want to take all those extra steps and spend that energy and then have that energy wasted. I also didn't want to start to set up any expectations or put a dot on the map that we're not even going to go to. So that's why you got something that's a little thin and very cursory at this point. I recognize that's where
it's at. All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Yeah, I just want to add, Martha, that in case it wasn't clear from the staff report, at the governing board, this will be a draft work plan. So there will be quite a bit more detail on each project and a more detailed staff report. And if we're lucky and we get the guidance from the EPA next week, even more. And what we had Tom do today was we wanted you all to have the titles of the projects we've come up with and have him talk about them a little bit so you had a sense. And if you had any strong feelings about any of those, before we even put them in the draft work plan for governing board. But what you'll get that will be a lot more reading. So
yeah, no, and they're great. I mean, I think they're all good. Hopefully we have money for all of them.
Agreed.
I got a question for you on the beach visitor user data that's available from cell phone analysis. Does that give you will it also give you the domicile relatively accurately of where that phone is based so we can tell where people are coming from?
Yeah, Charlie, I think if you pay attention to, you know, media discussions, like what your phone knows about you is probably more than you'd like, than you might feel comfortable knowing. So part of this, and I've been involved with a workup of data like this, just a little bit further to our north and west. We're going to need to put barriers between those raw data and curious eyes, because I know your address. I know where you get your coffee in the morning. I can learn everything about you from being able to go out there and purchase what is publicly available data. So it reminds me of sort of HIPAA protocols that medical providers have to make sure that people's data are protected. So I don't have all the specifics in place about how we're going to keep all that secure, but we pretend to work with a university partner in this case who's worked with these data in the past, and we're making sure that those protocols are in place so that that's where we're at. But yeah, the benefit is it does have that precision. It's not like, they sort of lived in this county or in this area. It is absolutely right down to your address.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Tom on this item or for staff? No, we look forward to hearing EPA's guidance on this very shortly. And if there's no other questions on this particular agenda item, we will move on to 2DIII, the Coastal Conservancy's Strategic Plan Development. Caitlin, would you introduce this, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So as Marissa mentioned earlier, the Executive Committee has played a really big role in identifying topics of interest to present to the Governing Board. So this is a follow-up to the EC's discussion in March to identify priority topics. So this one is relevant to climate change resiliency, so including strategies, plans, and policies to support impact reduction and resilience as a high priority informational item. Mitigating impacts and increasing resiliency to climate change is an important goal to our CCMP and has a nexus with many of the actions across the action plan. The State Coastal Conservancy Strategic Plan for 2023-2027 is underway. Development of that plan is underway, and it provides a vision and objectives for the agency over the next 5 years, including opportunities to improve resilience to climate change and to promote environmental equity and justice. So this item would be presented by State Coastal Conservancy staff. We've been working with Megan Cooper to schedule this item and see if they're interested, first of all, which they are, and focus on the development process to date and remaining opportunities to provide input, including the public comment period, which closes in August. So the Coastal Conservancy's board is anticipated to consider adoption of their strategic plan in December. So we thought it would be a great opportunity ahead of that time and before public comment closes to get an update from Coastal Conservancy on the plan. So in short, staff recommend the EC schedule this presentation for the August Governing Board meeting. And that concludes my report. I can answer any questions.
If no one has any questions, we'll move on to the next agenda item. Thank you for that introduction, Caitlin. Last call for questions on this.
Maybe not a question, Charlie, but very briefly, you know, the State Coastal Conservancy has been a terrific partner to, I think, many of us in the region, and certainly without their technical support as well as their financial support, we would not be anywhere as close as to making progress as we have on our CCMP. So I know we're very well aligned with them, and I think that there's sort of an inherent capacity for us to help inform their strategic plan. So I'm glad we're taking the time to consider it. That's all.
Thank you, Tom. Next item on the agenda is a presentation from our new technical advisory committee member, Dr. Alvina Mahinto with SCWRP. Marissa, would you introduce this, please?
Sure, thank you, Charlie. So this will be a brief presentation. Staff is proposing a brief presentation from the new technical advisory committee member, Alvina Mahinto, of the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, SCWRP. This is just an opportunity for the governing board to continue to connect with the expert volunteers on the TAC and for a new TAC member to interact with the governing board. Dr. Mahinto is head of the toxicology department at SCWRP, and this presentation will just be a brief introduction to her and her research focus. So staff recommends that the EC approve this presentation for the August 18th governing board meeting agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Marissa. Any questions? Seeing none, we will move on to the presentation, possible presentation on microplastics health effects. And this is a, I would ask Marissa to provide the staff report on this item, please.
Sure, thank you, Chair. So as we know, microplastics monitoring, impacts, and research is a priority identified in number 33 of the CCMP action plan, and it was another identified by the EC as a priority informational item. SCWRP hosted a microplastics health effects workshop series in 2020 through 2021, which many of you may have seen part of, with the intent of informing the public about the latest developments regarding potential health effects of microplastics. SCWRP has continued microplastics work to ultimately inform management actions regarding public health, drinking water standards, and ecological risks to coastal marine ecosystems. This presentation would be given by the project leads from SCWRP and provide a broad overview and update on the microplastics research. So staff recommends that the EC approve this presentation for the August 18th governing board meeting agenda. And I can answer any questions as well. Thank you.
Don't see any questions on there. Oh, yes. Erica, please go ahead.
Thank you. I think this is a great idea to have this presentation. Would SCWRP be presenting with Scott Coffin from the Water Board, or just from their side of the coin, so to speak?
The plan is for this to just be SCWRP presenting their perspective. It's the program manager and then the project lead who will present it from SCWRP. And we would have a separate, if we want to hear more on this topic based on feedback from you all, we would have something separate from the management side of things.
Thank you.
Catherine?
Go ahead.
Just kind of piggybacking on that, I know OPC also released their microplastic strategy, which I believe is informing the State Water Board effort. So those could kind of go hand in hand as follow-up eventually. I know we've already got a lot of items, so not for this one, and maybe not, like you said, until December, maybe we talk about that, but we could put it as a note, as if, especially after that presentation, if there's interest in following up on the policy side of things.
Yes, thank you. Anybody, anytime, those suggestions are welcome. You don't have to wait. It's really nice to have know what your thoughts are and have that list on hand, because it's so much better, as you can imagine, to schedule things early because people become busy.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I will now call for agenda item 3, member comments.
Oh, forgive me, Chair. I think we need to entertain a vote on establishing the agenda for the government.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Thank you very much for that, Caitlin. I would like a motion, a second, to approve the items to be included for the governing board meeting next month, as outlined by staff.
I move.
I'll second.
Thank you, Tessa. Thank you, EJ. Caitlin, would you call the roll vote on this, please?
Of course. I'm just sharing my screen. Okay. EJ Caldwell.
Yes.
Thank you. Chair Caspary?
Yes.
Thank you. Tessa Chernofsky?
Yes.
Thank you. Maura Monaghan?
Yes.
Thank you. Catherine Peace?
Yes.
Thank you. And Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion passes and the agenda is approved.
Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and move on to member comments. Anyone have news to report on progress of your agency or organization towards work plan success and implementation? My description of this agenda item may be lacking. Marissa, would you clarify that, please?
Yeah, really, we're welcoming any member comments. I think at this point, it's just our open member comments. We moved it ahead of closed session so that no one would have to wait around through closed session in this meeting.
Okay. Oh, sorry, let me raise my hand.
Please go ahead, Erica.
No, Martha seems ready. Go, Martha. That's fine. No. All right. No, thank you. So I'm gonna comb through my email box. I'm sure there's more funding announcements coming out through EPA. So I know we just got something through our Brownfields program for the Brownfields job training. Another request for applications for funding. And I think we have other programs that are going to be issuing requests for applications soon as well. So I will send those to Caitlin and Marissa after this. And then I actually have a question. I'm sorry if I'm a little off, but the meeting, we have a lot of great, we have a great lineup for the next governing board meeting. And I don't know if it's scheduled to end at 12, but I'm wondering how flexible just to, you know, we have at least two items that may need a lot of discussion and then really interesting presentations as well. And can we go to 12:30? I wanted to put that out there before you, because I think it's 9:30 to 12. So more of an administrative question. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good observation. It will be a busy agenda, and certainly would have staff mention to governing board members that the possibility of the meeting running long is very real, because these items have taken us almost 2 hours to get through. And there's a lot more of the governing board that will have opportunities to speak on this. Martha?
Well, I just wanted to mention that we have a virtual tour on August 13 for our joint water pollution control plant in Carson. That's our largest facility. We have a tunnel and outfall system, and it'll be about the plant and the treatment process. And this is where we are also hosting the Metropolitan Water District Advanced Purification Center and the future recycling of that flow, hopefully. So I'll send Marissa information on the tour. It's virtual, 9 a.m., August 13th.
Thank you very much, Martha. That'll be exciting. Any other member comments, please? Seeing none, we will move on to our next item on the agenda, which is closed session. And I would ask Marissa and to introduce the closed, well, actually, I'll ask Eric to introduce it and Marissa to explain how it's going to work.
Hi, everyone. This is Eric Gilman, counsel for the commission. I'm going to make the closed session announcement. Pursuant to Government Code 11126, subdivision E2B, the Commission Executive Committee will hold closed session today to discuss threatened litigation. We received an email on June 28th from Walter Lamb of the Biona Wetlands Land Trust. As you know, the trust has sued the commission on a number of occasions. And in his email, he indicated that he was preparing for new litigation against commission. He identified a few different potential causes of action. And so we will go into closed session now to discuss that further. So I think that Marissa sent a separate Zoom link to go into closed session for the voting members. So if any of you don't have that, please let us know. Otherwise, I think now would be the time to switch over. Maybe Marissa, you know more about the logistics. Do we have to leave this meeting to join the other?
Yeah, thank you so much, Eric, for introducing closed session. I'll just explain quickly. I just saw an email from Caitlin come in entitled 721 EC closed session, and hopefully you all also received that email. So we just have an extra step today to join the closed session, and this is because of our current live stream webinar. We will need to close this and join the separate closed session Zoom meeting link that Caitlin has sent. So if you could all just kind of go to your email, make sure you have that other link and join us there, that would be wonderful. It might take a minute in the waiting room for Caitlin to let us in, but just did anyone not receive the email? Any voting members, that is. Okay, that sounds promising. So I just want to make a quick reminder, Chair Caspary, we will need you to rejoin this public EC meeting afterwards to formally adjourn the meeting at the end. So I'll ask you to do that and I'll remind you at the end of the other one. Otherwise, if everyone has that link, I will see you in closed session.
Thank you.
And bye, Erica and Tom.
Goodbye. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Caitlin, how long ago did you send the email?
I just sent it. I sent it to both your Gmail and your Las Virgenes, but I can send it again really quickly. Let's see if you get this.
Okay, we are broadcasting and recording.
Very good, thank you. We are back in open session of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission executive meeting of July 21st, 2022. I would ask counsel for the commission, Eric Gilman, to provide a report out of closed session.
Hi, Chair Caspary, this is Eric Gilman, counsel, and there's nothing to report from closed session.
Thank you very much, Eric. Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you, Marissa. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.